Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Phoebe Zimmerman reporting. In Cairo, an Egyptian court has handed down death sentences to six defendants. Six death sentences have been issued in a trial for ousted former Islamist President Mohamed Morsi and nearly a dozen other co-defendants for the alleged transfer of secret information to the Gulf state of Qatar. Morsi's verdict was postponed, as Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
The Egyptian court sentenced six of the 11 defendants to death, pending a review of their sentences by the country's top religious authority. The panel of three judges postponed a verdict for former President Morsi until June 18. The trial is one of several the ousted former president is facing. It is not clear what verdict, if any, the court will give Morsi when it meets again on June 18. Any verdict that may be issued, however, can be appealed and is not final. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The anonymous source behind the leak of the Panama Papers says forcing governments to address income inequality is the motive for leaking the information and justification for the action. The source has released an 1,800-word statement just days before the information is to be made available to the public. Banks, financial regulators, and tax authorities have failed. Decisions have been made that have spared the wealthy while focusing instead on reining in middle and low-income citizens, the source wrote. No details pointing toward the source's identity have yet been released, except confirmation that the statement came from the entity who first provided details about the documents. This is VOA News. The Nigerian military has launched a military offensive aimed at putting pressure on the Islamist militant group Boko Haram, as well as rescue unarmed civilians kidnapped by the militants. This follows reports that the United States is considering selling light attack aircraft to Nigeria to help in the fight against Boko Haram. Critics of the Nigerian government say Islamic militants are active and still attacking civilians and soldiers, despite government pronouncements that Boko Haram has been effectively defeated. A Russian-brokered 72-hour extension for a ceasefire in the Syrian city of Aleppo remains in effect Saturday, with no immediate reports of a breakdown. Fighting between rebels and President Bashar al-Assad's forces has left nearly 300 people dead. The U.S. and Russia are co-chairs of a ceasefire task force. Russia has been using its leverage with the Assad government, and the U.S. has been using its influence with the opposition to try to curb the country's unrest. Shortly after the U.S. and Russia confirmed the initial reaffirmation of the ceasefire in Aleppo on Wednesday, at least 28 people were killed in an airstrike on a Syrian refugee camp in Idlib province near the country's border with Turkey. Sadiq Khan of Britain's Labour Party has become mayor of London after beating Conservative rival Zach Goldsmith in a bitter campaign. Election results announced Friday night show Londoners voted Khan into office at a margin of 57% to Goldsmith's 43%. Khan's victory in the mayoral race offered a bit of hope to the Labour Party after it took losses in local and regional elections across Britain on Super Thursday, in which 45 million Britons were eligible to vote. Khan is the first Muslim elected mayor of a major Western capital. North Korea continues its first ruling party Congress in 36 years with a promotion for leader Kim Jong-un. North Korea's state-run Korea Central News Agency reported that Saturday's itinerary includes electing Kim to a new position that will likely put him on an equivalent level with his father and grandfather, who held the title of General Secretary of the Workers' Party. Foreign journalists were barred from the event. Kim's rise in political stature is taking place as a U.S. monitoring group warns North Korea may be preparing to carry out another nuclear test in the near future. Two prominent Turkish journalists are facing prison terms of up to 5 years for reporting on alleged government arms smuggling in Syria. A Turkish court sentenced the journalists hours after one of them escaped a gunman. I'm Phoebe Zimmerman, reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
The Egyptian court sentenced six of the 11 defendants to death, pending a review of their sentences by the country's top religious authority.
An Egyptian court hands down death sentences to six defendants in a trial for ousted former President Mohamed Morsi.
Because it is his first budget, people in Tanzania are expecting a lot. And I can say we have talked about the industrialization process in Tanzania.
The Tanzanian parliament begins the approval process for President John Magufuli's first budget.
Operation Latia Dole itself is the operation by the Nigerian military to clear all the remnants of Boko Haram terrorists.
And the Nigerian military launches a fresh offensive to rescue abducted civilians from Boko Haram. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. An Egyptian court has handed down death sentences to six defendants in a trial for ousted former President Mohamed Morsi and nearly a dozen other co-defendants for the alleged transfer of secret information to the Gulf state of Qatar. Morsi's verdict was postponed, as Edward Uranian reports for VOA from the Egyptian capital, Cairo.
The Egyptian court sentenced six of the 11 defendants to death, pending a review of their sentences by the country's top religious authority. The panel of three judges postponed a verdict for former President Morsi until June 18. The trial is one of several the ousted former president is facing. Video of the courtroom showed Morsi in the glass defendant's cage, smiling and waving his hands in what appeared to be a victory gesture. Several co-defendants could also be seen smiling and chanting, but it was impossible to distinguish their words. Three of the six people who were condemned to death are currently outside the country and were tried in absentia. Sentences for those tried in absentia are automatically dismissed pending a new trial should they return to Egypt. One of those convicted in absentia, the former head of Al Jazeera TV's news division, Ibrahim Halal, told Arab media that he thought the charges were unfounded and that he was not worried about the verdict.
أنا كصحفي هو وسام شرف لي أن أحاكم على جريمة نشر وسام شرف لي على أن أحاكم وأن
He says that the verdict is a badge of honor and that he doubts any legal body outside of Egypt would honor the decision and hand him over to Egyptian authorities. Hilal went on to argue that the charges of handing over sensitive defense information to Qatar was not extremely convincing, since only one of 17 pages of information was remotely sensitive, dealing with Egypt's improving ties with the Hamas group in Gaza. Veteran editor and publisher Hisham Qasim tells VOA that he is surprised by the verdict, since most of those sentenced to death were fairly insignificant figures, while the top defendants, like Morsi, appear to have been spared harsh sentences, at least for the moment. The head of the Muslim Brotherhood's Foreign Relations Department told Qatari-owned Al Jazeera TV that he thinks Saturday's trial of Morsi and his co-defendants is purely politically motivated, and he claimed that the Egyptian judiciary was under the thumb of Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. He went on to argue that Sisi had met with Qatar's former ruler, Amir Hamad bin Khalifa al-Thani, repeatedly and had embraced him, so the charges of handing sensitive information to Qatar makes no sense. A Qatari intelligence agent who is also being tried in absentia in the case was not named by the court. It is not clear what verdict, if any, the court will give Morsi when it meets again on June 18. Any verdict that may be issued, however, can be appealed and is not final. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Tanzanian parliamentarians are meeting in the capital, Dodoma, to discuss and approve President John Magufuli administration's proposed budget for this year. Information Minister Nape Nnauye says parliament plans to complete the budget approval process in July. It will be Magufuli's first budget following his election victory in last October's polls. Nnauye told me 40% of the budget will be for national development project, a sharp departure from previous practices where allocations for development stayed at 27%.
There are a lot of promises that were given by the ruling party CCM, by Magufuli himself, and because it is his first budget, people in Tanzania are expecting a lot. And I can say we have talked about the industrialization process in Tanzania, and as Magufuli himself has said, and the Minister for Finance has said, compared to the other budgets that have passed, this time the government has put aside 40% of its budget for development. The last budget, it was only 27%, which was set for development. And actually, Tanzanians are expecting that this budget will revive the industrial process in the country. This will increase the growth of the economy, will provide employment, and it is expected will change the standard of living of the men of our people in the country.
Now, Nape, expectations among Tanzanians are high based on promises made by President Magufuli and, of course, the ruling party, the CCM. Do you think the expectations of Tanzanians will be met following the fact that CCM had promised over the years and not fully been able to deliver on those promises? What will be different this time?
I am in the government, so anyone could expect me to say these expectations will be met. But Magufuli has performed since he was sworn in as the president of the United Republic of Tanzania, has taken great measures. He has been a talk of Africa, a talk of the world. And, you know, some of the Kenyans were telling us, can't you give us Magufuli even for 1 month? For almost these several months he is in power, has even not gone outside his country. He went to Rwanda and he drove by car to Rwanda. And we are hoping these measures he has been taking just brought reforms in the government, the way the people are accountable, the way people they are using their offices, the revenue has increased. And even the expenditure of the government, he has cut the expenditure of the government. And that's why he has set 40% of the budget to the development. So,
Nape, let me ask you, you talked about revenue generation. He has fired one of the parastatal officials who he said has not performed well because he has not generated enough revenue for the government. What measures is he put in place that would generate enough money, you know, as part of this budget process to meet the demands of Tanzanians as well as meet the expectations of Tanzanians of the promises that he made to them?
You know, there are several sources of revenue in the country. But taking one example, as you have cited, the port side. You know, the port side. There are a lot of businessmen who are bringing cargoes in this country and they are not paying tax. And it is because of this habit of not paying tax, cargoes were delayed at the port. There were no officials. When he went there, he fired some of the officers there. After firing them, he appointed some other guys to work there. It is now obvious that the performance of the port is performing very well. It has attracted other businessmen, other countries to pass their cargo through Dar es Salaam port. So this definitely will increase the revenue. Now, there are two sides. There is that side of increasing revenue, but there is that side of cutting the expenditure. And, you know, we have few examples. You know, we had Union Day here. We are spending more than $2-3 billion. And we have Independence Day here. We were to spend billions of money. And there are several other expenditures that he has cut. So he has increased the revenue collection, but also he has cut the expenditure.
Nape Nnauye is the Tanzanian Information Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Dodoma. Turning to West Africa, the Nigerian military has launched a military offensive aimed at putting pressure on the Islamist militant group Boko Haram, as well as rescue unarmed civilians kidnapped by the militant, according to military spokesman Kenel Sani Kukashika Usman. His comments follow reports that the United States is considering selling 12 light attack aircraft to Nigeria to help the West African country in the fight against Boko Haram. Usman told me that Boko Haram is currently a shell of itself, incapable of seizing territories.
The essence of that operation is an additional operation, rather a special one within Operation Latia Dole itself, which is the operation by the Nigerian military to clear all the remnants of Boko Haram terrorists. However, the crackdown, as you are quite aware, we still have remnants of these Boko Haram terrorists hibernating inside Sambisa Forest. So the essence of it is to clear the remnants of Boko Haram within that forest and also intensify our rescue operations. And so far, the operation is progressing very well, even though the other time they attempted to attack our position through ISA. And, of course, our troops rose to the occasion and dealt decisively with the Boko Haram terrorists to the point of killing quite a number of them and recovered weapons, especially, you know, anti-aircraft guns and, of course, mortar bombs like 81 millimeter. And the operation is going on fine.
What do you say to critics who say that despite the successes of what the military have said, that it has chalked against this militant, the militants are still potent in orchestrating not only suicide bombings, but even attacking unarmed civilians as well as the military or the soldiers themselves?
This is not correct, simply because I believe whoever is saying so is 1 month or 2 months behind, in the sense that if you take the gauge of the security situation within the country, I don't think within the last 1 month we have had any suicide bombing, or even within the last 60 days. So that assertion is not correct. And then number two, if you look at it, the Boko Haram terrorists caught virtually almost everybody unaware, because within, or let's say, 7 months, 7 years ago, or 6 years ago, nobody in Nigeria ever thought that we have a problem of terrorism, let alone the magnitude of Boko Haram terrorists, as it were. And for 6 years, these terrorists have had, you know, a good time sacking towns, villages, including military formations. But within a short period of time, let's say from July last year up to this moment, all those gains by the Boko Haram have been reversed to the point that we have even recaptured not only the villages and towns they had to call their caliphate, including their spiritual headquarters in Alagarno. And now what remains is just the basic elements of the Boko Haram terrorists in Sambisa Forest. And I can tell you now, some of the terrorists that were, you know, arrested, they confessed to the fact that they have run out of ammunition, they have run out of food and everything, and we have encircled them. So it's just a matter of time. Of course, naturally, people who are detached to the realities of what is happening, they can say whatever they want to say. But I can tell you, we are working very hard round the clock, and I want to even assure you, the Nigerian military is at the verge of making world history in the sense that we are able to defeat a terrorist organization within a short period of time that other people were unable to do so.
Let me ask you about the issue of rescuing abducted or kidnapped people, including the Chibok girls, because part of this Operation Crackdown, as you said initially, is to also rescue people who have been kidnapped. What can you tell me about this?
Yeah, as you know, the fight against terrorism and insurgency, it is no question of clearance. Over time, these terrorists, whenever they sack villages or towns, they also abduct quite a number of people. And if they occupy territories, they also, take people hostage. So there are quite a number of Nigerians, and I believe foreigners too, because just recently some of the rescued persons, we found out there were foreigners among them. So they abducted quite a number of people. And luckily enough, over time, we have been able to rescue nothing less than 12,000 people, which we have been working to also ensure that we rescue them, including the abducted Chibok school girls. And we are hopeful, definitely wherever they are, we'll definitely rescue them.
Colonel Sani Kukashika Usman is the spokesman for the Nigerian military. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. Gambia has been gripped by peaceful protests since April. The protests were sparked in part by the death of opposition official Ibrahima Sanding, who died while in custody. Party leader Osei Dabo and other opposition members were arrested last month and charged with conspiracy to commit a felony. Dr. Amadou Jane is the director of Coalition for Change Gambia. My colleague Douglas Impoga reached him in Atlanta in the U.S. state of Georgia and began by asking him how common it was to die in a Gambian prison.
Mortality rate in a prison in the Gambia is very high indeed. But much more troubling is the number of people who die as a result of torture in the hands of our security forces and the notorious National Intelligence Agency. We had reported on this for quite a while, provided information to UN agencies and human rights organizations that there is widespread torture in the Gambia, particularly torture of folks who are under detention, people who are not even charged with any criminal acts, people who simply exercise their fundamental rights. And Solo Sanding's death sparked this current round of protests, but it also highlights the whole range of abuses under Jammeh's regime. You look at the judiciary there, you have mercenary judges who simply carry out the directives of Yahya Jammeh. If he says no bail, it means no bail. They would find some rationale to keep Usainu Dabo and the others in prison. And even if the judge says that conditions in the prison have to change, the judge may go through the motions and make a pronouncement, but nothing comes out of it. But the events are also significant in that I got the life sentence simply for distributing 100 T-shirts with the inscription "End Dictatorship Now." But today we've seen hundreds of people protesting in the middle of Banjul at the High Court with banners saying the same thing, chanting and fighting the security forces. So it may have come very late, but we have seen that the fear that has enabled Jammeh to remain in power for 22 years and to act with impunity is gradually eroding, and I don't see this changing anytime soon. So
under President Jammeh's leadership, Gambian security forces are known for their brutality. But since the protests began in April, there seems to be a change. Do you think the forces, might have read the signs and may side with the protesters?
Well, there's a great deal of international attention being focused on the Gambia. And Jammeh has found out that brute force may not work this time. So what they're doing, especially around the courts, is to have a process whereby the protests would simply fade and the people would lose interest. One thing is to have the court cases adjourned several times, and then to make traveling to the capital very difficult, a lot of checkpoints, and hoping that interest would fade rather than just simply going out to shoot as they, you know, started and as they normally do. But the economic problems that the country is facing is also a key issue. Jammeh is finding it difficult to reward his loyalists as he did in the past, and Senegal has put a squeeze on the country with the border crisis that's going on. We are not counting on the security forces to do anything, but one thing is certain: the protests will continue, and regardless of what kinds of delay tactics the regime uses, fear is eroding rapidly, and there will be concerted efforts to try to exercise our fundamental rights and ultimately end dictatorship in the country. Before this series of events, the calls were for electoral reform. Now no one is talking about electoral reforms. The agenda is only one. There's only one item on the plate: ending dictatorship in the country. It's people power that's going to galvanize change in the country.
Amadou Djaneh is the director of Coalition for Change Gambia. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpoga from Atlanta. It may not be a circus in the traditional sense, but a group of young people has been twisting, tumbling, and jumping their way around Somaliland in order to teach people, predominantly in the rural areas, key social messages. From Hargeisa, VOA East Africa correspondent Jill Craig has more.
They perform feats that can be nerve-wracking simply to watch, building human pyramids high into the air, leapfrogging over one another, and tumbling down long mats at high speed. But it's all in a day's work, or practice, for young performers like Ahmed Yassin. He says, "I like it because it builds your body, you become active, and you stay away from drugs." Yassin and his 64 fellow acrobats are members of Circus Somaliland, which puts on as many as 40 events per year around Somaliland, aiming to entertain as well as educate. Abdullahi Hassan is the country representative for the Horn of Africa Voluntary Youth Committee, which founded the circus in 1997.
So it's something new, something, you know, innovative. So that's why people, they like. And it's different what they were just seeing for centuries. It's a new thing to Somaliland.
Acrobat Saeed Abdi Ali agrees that the traveling shows are popular. He says, people like us, they come to watch, and when we go to other regions, they also come to watch. Some of them are surprised at what we do. The acrobatic feats draw the crowds, while the circus's drama team addresses topics like malaria and HIV/AIDS, girls' education, the prevention of early marriage, children's rights, the dangers of drug use, and landmine avoidance. And they also perform skits about the perils of illegal migration, says circus manager Kamal Hassan Isak.
Really, it's a big issue because a lot of children or youth has been died in the Sahara or the sea, the Mediterranean Sea.
The International Organization on Migration says over 66,000 migrants from the Horn of Africa arrived in Europe last year, a marked increase from 2014. And it remains a dangerous journey. Hundreds of East African migrants were killed when their boat capsized in the southern Mediterranean just this April. The drama team grabs stories like that from the headlines and reenacts them. Hassan says that the shows are effective because people in the rural areas have limited access to TVs and radios, and also for another reason.
It's a good tool that we can deliver messages to the community because in the Somali society, most of them, they don't read and write.
And the energy of these young performers keeps the crowds coming back for more. Jill Craig, VOA News, Hargeisa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today.
Double, double, one, so different. My family will be there, too different. Too different. different. Genuinely, I'm so different. To double double, I'm so different. But then we will be there, too different. Too different.
I feel different when I'm with you, oh boy. I feel different. There's nothing that compares.
Umenifunga ni ite chipo, umenipata fresh atapo, umeiva kama popo. Ah baby, can't you see that me I'm a sick MC? This is an emergency. Miami, I'll be there when I see you.
I feel different when I'm with you, oh boy. I feel different. There's nothing that compares.
Kama soja, mini mnyama na wendio tema. Weni pet na mindio ona. Drunk in love, I'm never sober. My boy wanna die ni mwatoka. Different kama Fanta na Coca. Kampuni moja but mindio na gonga. Hey, gonga, mindio na gonga. Yemi yemi mami, dakupa deli deli darling. Twende na inai nami, tupate baraka zangai. Nasema yemi yemi mami, dakupa deli deli darling. Twende na inai nami, tupate baraka zangai. Cause I feel
oh boy, I feel different. There's nothing that compares, but I feel different. Different, different. I feel different. Different. When I'm with you, oh boy, I feel different. Different. There's nothing that compares, but I feel different. Different, different.
Now, we don't upgrade the matter. Daily and weekly and monthly and quarter. Now, we don't talk to butter. Family they smile and we know get quanta. That we just say Yoruba. Make them no go forget say Badona Baba. Erugu de Siyama.
tu Kim Kardashian, the back of my brand new Bentley. Is it because I'm ballin'? They want to know my ginger, they want to hear my story, they want for me for linger.
Supposed to live like family, yeah. say, I know the lie. There's nothing stopping me. She dey feel my swag and I get money. I dey try my best to be somebody. Cause I'm living life. She's girl dey make me higher, higher. I dey feel this baby. You no go believe. This girl na die, die. If you see this baby, tell him say, she must chop my money. Chop my money. Chop my money. Cause I don't care. Chop my money. Chop my money. Chop my money. Cause I don't care. I don't care.
Don't care.
I don't care.
Don't care.
I don't care.
I don't care.
Cause I get a plenty. I don't care.
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 Cause you know the empty.
My salt and stunt for you, you know I can. Farabale, koma lole, omwele, ake pepe, jemba soro, kilo shele. If you see her eyes, eyes, you don't go believe she's looking at me.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Odette Frazier, and engineer for today, Xiao Gang Chang. We say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the hunter's name is always connected to the meat of the elephant. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In Angola, the three most important human rights abuses during 2015 were cruel, excessive, and degrading punishment, including reported cases of torture and beatings. limits on freedoms of assembly, association, speech, and press, and official corruption and impunity. That is the finding of the U.S. Department of State's country reports on human rights practices for 2015, released in April. The report is released annually on human rights practices around the world. The report for Angola also discussed other human rights abuses, including arbitrary or unlawful deprivation of life, harsh and potentially life-threatening prison conditions, arbitrary arrest and detention, lengthy pretrial detention, impunity for human rights abusers, lack of due process and judicial inefficiency, forced evictions without compensation, restrictions on non-governmental organizations, trafficking in persons, limits on workers' rights, and forced labor. The Angolan government took some steps to prosecute or punish officials who committed abuses. However, accountability was weak due to a lack of checks and balances, lack of institutional capacity, a culture of impunity, and widespread government corruption. But recent events continue to cause concern for human rights in Angola. The United States publicly expressed concern over the harsh sentences an Angolan court handed down in March to 17 civil society activists, noting that their conviction threatens the exercise of the freedoms of expression and peaceful assembly in Angola. Their sentences range from 2 years to 8.5 years in prison. The activists, known as the 15-plus, were arrested last June, reportedly after a peaceful political discussion about democracy and governance. Two other activists were later charged with crimes. The 15-plus-2 were eventually convicted in March of preparatory acts of rebellion and criminal conspiracy. Secretary of State John Kerry said the annual human rights report renews the U.S. commitment to promoting and protecting universal human rights, to supporting and defending civil society in its peaceful efforts to hold governments accountable, and to working with our partners to advance peace, development, human rights, and democracy.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.